Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is a Roifield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, Anna.
If country borders and grids can fascinate you, and state names intrigue you, if atlases, globes, city plans, subway maps, and of course, world maps are your thing, if you can name the capital city of Namibia, and if you get giddy about flags, you are in the right place. This is Map Corner, a podcast about the love of maps brought to you by Roifield Brown and Claire Asprey. Now, on with the show.
Hello and welcome to Map Corner. I'm Roifield Brown, who is in Canada, in Burlington, with my kids. That puts me at 43.3 degrees north and 79.7 degrees west. And with me, I have my able co-partner. Co-partner? Partner, Claire Asprey. Where are you today, Claire?
Well, it will not surprise you to hear that I'm at 52.1 degrees north and 0.5 degrees east in Bedfordshire, where I have recorded every episode of Map Corner.
Map Corner is a podcast dedicated to the love of maps and to all things cartophilic. So if Peters is your projection, you're in the right place.
And this month we're joined by Ralph Velasco, who's a photographer, traveller and bon viveur, who shares his travel tips and insights as the Continental Drifter on YouTube.
And this month we have an audio postcard from our Fiona Powell, her of the Golden Larynx. And folks, don't forget to review us on Apple iTunes, because the more reviews we get, the more listeners we get. So go on to Apple iTunes, write us a review. Hopefully it'll be positive, and hopefully we'll get even more listeners.
Yeah, we had some really good feedback on the Facebook page this month about the episode that we did with David Martins, the chef. So we are recording, as usual, with listeners from the Map Corner community. And if you want to join the live Zoom recordings, just join the Facebook group to get personally invited every time.
Now, we record the first Saturday of every month at 6 p.m. UK time, which is 1 p.m. Eastern, which is 10 a.m. Pacific. But in August, we're recording an extra episode. So our next recording will actually be Saturday, the 21st of August. So make a note in your diaries.
Okay, and we're going to start with our conversation with Ralph Velasco. So Ralph is the Continental Drifter on YouTube and has a really interesting backstory, loves to travel, and has a lot of top tips to share. So welcome, Ralph, and do you want to tell us about how you got started with getting the travel bug and then, you know, working in taking people and seeing the world?
Sure. Well, hello, everyone, and thank you for having me. This is great. I'm originally from Chicago, and I started traveling quite a bit when I was fairly young in high school. Studied in Spain for a summer. The next year, I was a volunteer in Peru. The following year, I was a volunteer in Venezuela. And then the following summer, I studied in Mexico City. So I got the travel bug very early on and always was looking for a way to make a living from travel. But back then, this is the early to mid 80s. We didn't have the internet, social media, practically didn't have airplane travel. No, I'm kidding. But, you know, so it was a very different environment back then as far as, you know, creating a following. And, you know, so it was a lot of very, you know, to be a professional photographer meant being a National Geographic photographer or, you know, some big magazine. And I always aspired to that, but kind of gave up on that dream, to be honest, and just followed kind of a more of a standard route and did a lot of different things. I was sold real estate. I've owned several restaurants. I was a marketing director for a division of a Fortune 500 company. I was a financial advisor. And so when the digital...
Wait a minute, Ralph, is it fairly safe to say you've been a bit of a drifter then before?
I've been... Yeah, that's kind of, I know where the name came from, drifting. That's right. And so I just, you know, when the digital photography came around in the, I would say in the early 2000s and sort of the internet was coming on strong, I saw an opportunity to maybe teach people how to use these new digital devices, their digital cameras that I was learning myself. And so I thought maybe I could do some walking tours and teach people how to use these new digital devices that they were purchasing. And this is 2001 and two maybe. So kind of the dawn of digital photography. And you know, I knew that the opportunity probably wasn't gonna be in actually selling images because, you know, the bottom had kind of fallen out of that, the stock photo market. And so I decided that I would do some just walking tours in the local area. And this, I was living in Chicago at the time, even just sitting across the kitchen table from someone and going over their camera from top to toe and showing them how to use it. So got a lot of interest in that. But at the same time, I was a financial advisor. And so now fast forward about 2005 to 2008, I was back in Southern California. I'd lived there for a total of 15 years, but I'm back in Chicago now as location independent, really. I don't really have a home. But to make a long story longer, I was a financial advisor there and also starting my photography tour business and teaching people. And I love to teach. And I love to teach photography. So I started teaching at the local city of Newport Beach, the Santa Ana College, and a lot of kind of adult education. And I really enjoyed that. I love to teach and it kind of grew. And then in 2008, September of 2008, we probably all know what happened there. We had the financial crisis. Not a great time to be a financial advisor, which I was at the time, and barely scraping by. But, you know, that was the kick in the pants that I needed to get out of that and to do this full time. And so I say it only took me 45 years to figure out what I wanted to do with my life, but most people never do.
And how do you decide on the locations for your tours? Because you go into all different sort of continents and places, but places that are like not always the most obvious, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, well, I wanted to do something a little different and be a little bit off the beaten path. So I kind of the first criteria is it has to be a place that interests me because it's going to be hard for me to sell the trip to someone else if I'm really not interested in the place. And so I tend to create trips to places that I want to travel to, that I want to see, that I'm interested in. And then I go there and I scout and I check it out for a couple of weeks usually. And then the following year, I will bring a group back and hopefully do that for many years to come. So it just depends on the itinerary.
So when you're scouting, is that when the maps come in?
Yeah, a lot of map usage that at that time for sure. If you can see behind me, I've got a map here on the wall. It's actually a newer map. From a very young age, I used to keep track of all the places that I'd travel to with a pin on a map, like, you know, a lot of people do. And unfortunately, that original map was dry mounted and it started to warp. And there's probably six or seven moves in there. And so the thing got trashed. But I tried to recreate it with this framed map behind me. But I just have always loved looking at maps, studying them, figuring out, you know, how to get from one place to the next. I miss physical maps. I don't use a lot of physical maps anymore, you know, because we've got these phones in our pocket.
Let me jump in, mate. You're in the right place. Right. Nick Rowworth would hate Google Maps. Don't you, Nick? You love a physical map. You love a bit of paper. You like get your hands on it, and you're in the right place for that, Ralph. But don't let me ruin your story, sir. You continue on, but you're in good hands here.
Trust me. Good. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't use a lot of physical maps anymore. I just, because I travel so much, I'm on the road 8 or 9 months out of the year leading these tours and scouting. So I really don't have a home. I'm what's come to be called location independent. So just nice way of saying homeless, but in a good way. And so I pretty much live on the road. And so I try to minimize weight and space and things like that. So, you know, it's really convenient to have these phones in our pocket that we can just use a Google map. And it's pretty simple to do. And so I hope you won't kick me off the show, but I'll have to say I don't use a lot of physical maps these days.
But do you get to see in the places where you're visiting? One of the things I always do when I go somewhere, first thing I do in any location or on any holiday is go somewhere and pick up a map, because that's just, you know, me. And what I love about that is to see what the local tourist people think is worth telling you about. And, you know, and sometimes that's not always what you'd expect. So I don't know if you've got any examples of really like unusual things that you've been advised to see locally. Like, how does it compare to what you feel is genuinely interesting?
Well, I don't know that it exactly has to do with maps, but, you know, when I do these scouting trips, I'm in touch with local tour operators and tourist boards in the locations that I'm going to. And I initially, when I started out, would, you know, just kind of introduce myself, say I organize and lead tours, I'm looking to come to your country and put together an itinerary. And I kind of, you know, gave them a little bit more information than that. But I found that when I would get to the place, they would want to show me everything. And I needed to pare that down. I needed to pull back on that because there just wasn't enough time to see everything. I knew what my groups were interested in, not necessarily monuments and museums, but, you know, how can we meet the local artisans and the people and maybe have, you know, a cup of tea in someone's home and those kinds of real cultural experiences. So, you know, along that lines, it's interesting what the tourist board thinks are the most interesting places to see and what, you know, we all have our own opinions of that.
Absolutely. And I guess for you as well, it's about things that are interesting to photograph. And like you say, that daily life of real people is a really interesting thing to come home with photos of compared to a statue or a museum, which is fine, but it's something that's really distinctive, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, everyone's getting those postcard shots of the monuments and the landscapes and the very popular statues and things like that. But it's the people that make the difference, that are unique, and that I love to get in and meet them, learn what it is that they're making, whether it's particular instruments to the place, you know, maybe it's flamenco guitars in Spain, or it's a particular type of cheese, you know, in some other location. And also the food. So I'm really big on the food. I grew up in the restaurant industry and I had a couple of restaurants of my own. I eat 3 meals a day. And so I think the next to the people, food is about the most distinctive thing that you can find in a place too.
Yeah, gotcha. Absolutely.
So I'm imagining that COVID's put, as we'd say in Britain, the kibosh, but kind of really, you know, harmed your travel plans in the last like 18 months.
Absolutely. I mean, I, you know, have been 100% affected by the travel ban. And like I said, I'm location independent, so I live on the road. Thank goodness I have family to stay with in between trips and have been during this whole period, although I have had a couple chances. I was in Turkey for a couple months last October, and I just ran my first group trips, which happened to be to Costa Rica back to back in a couple weeks ago in early July, about a month ago, and went to Nicaragua. So I've gotten around a little bit. But as far as, you know, actually making a living, it had been a year and a half before I'd had any group trips, which is pretty much how I make my living. So it was a big problem. I am also, I'm a solopreneur, you know, solo entrepreneur. So I work pretty much by myself, and I don't have employees. I don't have physical office space. So I didn't have a lot of overhead. So I was able to kind of weather the storm and wait it out.
You weren't tempted to go back to financial advising?
Oh, God, no. No. But to me, I was the most surprised at how well the market did over the last year and a half or so. And thank goodness for that for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, an obvious question, which I won't ask you, is like, where would be, the best place you've ever been to and stuff. So I won't ask you that most obvious question. But what I will ask you is, tell us about the people that come on your tours. How do you define them? What type of people are they?
Sure. Yeah, it's a great question. When I started out, as you do with almost any business, you'll take any business that someone will throw your way. So you want to be everything to everyone. And I learned very quickly that that doesn't work in my business. It's a very sort of customized, unique business. The people are coming on my trips in large part because of me. Because of my style of travel, because of the types of trips I'm putting together. So initially I started out thinking that they would be photo workshops. I learned very quickly that workshops, work is a four-letter word. We're there to have fun. They're great for some people that are interested in doing photography 24/7 for, 2 weeks at a time. But I was more interested in providing some sort of a hybrid where don't even call them photo tours anymore, really, but more cultural tours with a focus on photography. So photography is a part of our trips. So I get people that aren't even interested in photography necessarily, or a couple that one's interested, the other one not necessarily, and everyone has a great time. There's something for everyone. About a half day scheduled, half day free time, so it can go pursue the other person's interest or go put into practice what they've learned with regards to photography, or not feel like they have to be with the group all the time. So people started to filter themselves out as the clearer I came with my vision of what these trips were. And I realized that it wasn't about, that the worst thing you can do is not set expectations for people, not tell them what they're in for. And then they come on the trip and it's not what they expected. They wanted more photography, or they didn't want photography at all. And that's not good for them. It makes me look bad. They don't have the experience that they want. So I try to become more and more clear with that vision and letting people know exactly what they're in for. Now, if my trips aren't what you're into, then you're going to filter yourself out. But if you are into what I do, you're going to love it.
Yeah. And the YouTube channel is a really good way of doing that, presumably, because, you can get to see what the trips are like, and, what that mixture of culture and a bit of photography and interest in different places.
Right. And everyone's some sort of a photographer. We've all got these devices in our pockets. And, I think that this sort of experiential travel where people want to learn something on a trip, whether it's a language, how to cook, how to photograph or paint, whatever it is. People are, they can do those beach vacations by themselves. They don't need me to guide them to a beach. But, those ones where, man, I want to meet, really interesting people just doing what they do. And maybe I'll have my camera with me. It might be my iPhone, whatever. Maybe I just stand by the side and just enjoy it. Because, who doesn't love to be in the right place at the right time with great light, very few tourists? It's cooler because I like to get out early. And I don't mean, every sunrise for sure. But, 7:30 in the morning, the town or the place is waking up a little bit. The kids are on the way to school in their uniforms. People are on their way to work. And, there's less crime because there's no tourists out, and that's when the pickpockets come out and prey. So it's all worked out really well, and I've been doing this now for about 13 or 14 years full time, and it created a pretty nice following and about 45% repeat rate on my trips. So 4.5 out of 10 people on my trips have traveled with me before.
Wow. They're obviously good. That recommendation there in the repeat business. So you travel the world and you obviously like people, but this must be somewhat at variance with your own kind of personal relationships, because you're never at home, you're never at any one place.
Yeah, it's a great point. And, you know, it's a dream job for a lot of people, and it was for me, and it still is. But you know, I've been doing it now, like I said, for 13, 14 years full time. And as you can imagine, being on the road 8 or 9 months out of the year, packing and unpacking every 2 to 4 nights, you know, lugging a, you know, piece of luggage around the world literally 4 or 5 times a year, and planes, trains, and automobiles. I mean, that part of it gets old. You know, I say I love to travel. I just hate getting there and back. You know, I love to be in these places, but it's getting there and back that's a real pain sometimes.
Yeah, and that's one of the things about your videos, that you're doing all these like very short travel tips, but that are clearly born from experience.
Yeah, I figure if I make these mistakes, if I can help other people not to make them or to minimize them, you know, that's providing value, and I love to do that. So let me make the mistakes, and hopefully you can learn from them and not make them yourself.
And on that note, what we should do is take a quick break and do our audio postcard. And seasoned listeners of this podcast will know that whoever wins the quiz the month previous has the honor of doing the audio postcard. It's a great way of us just foisting the job onto somebody else. So it's well done us, Claire and I, for thinking of this ruse back last year. But so Fiona, who is somewhat of a staple Zoom listener of the podcast, did this audio postcard about her new adopted home. Here is Fiona's audio postcard.
I'd like to introduce you to the Susquehanna River Valley of my adopted home in Pennsylvania. The Susquehanna River, originally the home of the Susquehannock tribes, is the longest non-navigable river in the US. It rises in two places, the North Branch in New York State, the West Branch in the Allegheny Mountains. The branches join in Northumberland to form one river that flows past Harrisburg and into the Chesapeake Bay. I can't talk about this part of the world without at least mentioning Scranton, birthplace of President Joe Biden, as well as the ancestral home of Hillary Rodham Clinton and the birthplace of the modern labor movement in the US. But Scranton misses being on the Susquehanna River by a few miles, and frankly, deserves 5 minutes of its own. So I'll just have to try and be lucky on another quiz. So we're sticking to the River Valley towns, and I'll begin at the place where the two branches meet in Northumberland to acknowledge the father of chemistry who made this place his home. Yorkshire-born Joseph Priestley, one of the founders of the Unitarian Church in England, discoverer of oxygen, which he called dephlogisticated air, and a famous dissenter, was living in Birmingham in 1791 when, during the riots, his house and laboratory were destroyed and his effigy burned in the streets. Frightened for his life, he took up the invitation sent to him by his friend, Benjamin Franklin, to come to America to live. He built a home and laboratory in Northumberland, where I'm happy to say he still caused trouble. He wrote pamphlets, founded the Unitarian Church in the US, and continued with his discoveries, one being how to carbonate liquids. So if you enjoy your Coca-Cola, you can thank Joseph Priestley. A few miles from Priestley's house is Lewisburg, home of Bucknell University, alma mater of Philip Roth, and of the hymn writer Robert Lowry, who wrote Shall We Gather at the River. On the grounds of Bucknell stands a carriage house that was one of the main stops on the Underground Railroad. This was one of many local places that provided safe haven for escaped slaves. Here they were taken in to rest and hide until they were escorted out to the next stop, which was often upriver to men like Daniel Hughes in Williamsport. From Williamsport, north through New York State to Canada. Some of the slaves chose to stay in Williamsport, and an area they named Freedom Road commemorates these men and women, as well as African Americans who gave their lives during the Civil War. Williamsport was the home of the first female African American fiction writer, Julia Collins. Williamsport is also famous for Little League Baseball. Now, I love Little League because it really is international. It really is inclusive. From girls now being able to play to the Challenger game for kids with physical and intellectual challenges. For 2 weeks, kids from all over the world make Williamsport their home and they are treated like stars. Also in Williamsport lived John Henry Hopkins, who wrote We Three Kings of Orient Are. But it's to the iron town of Danville we must go to visit the home of the man who in the 19th and early 20th century was considered the greatest composer ever born in Wales, Joseph Parry. Parry emigrated to Danville at the age of 10 and wrote, amongst many other things, Myvanwy, Aberystwyth, the tune for Jesu Lover of My Soul, and the first Welsh opera, Blodwen. Another Welshman who moved to Danville as a child was Griffith J. Griffith. He left Danville as a young man to make his fortune out west. Griffith donated land to the city of Los Angeles and created Griffith Park and the Griffith Observatory. Oh, and the typewriter and QWERTY keyboard were invented just outside Danville by Christopher Sholes. These are just some of the great people who have made this quiet part of Pennsylvania notable. I mean, I could go on to talk of tomatoes and Chef Boyardee, but I haven't time to do more but raise a carbonated drink to the dephlogisticated air that I breathe and to the extraordinary people of the Susquehanna River Valley.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Fantastic. Thank you, Fiona.
Absolutely was. And
really well done.
Utterly well done. So thank you for that, Fiona. That was most awesome.
Brilliant.
I don't think there's anything else to know about Pennsylvania now. And everything that's good from Pennsylvania came from Wales. But that's what I got from that, Fiona.
I thought you'd be wanting to say more about your Brummy friend, Joseph.
Well, but I think she put that in because he was drummed out of Birmingham. Drummed out of my hometown for being a little bit of a genius. So yes, well done for that, for the little subtle dig there, Fiona, but it was utterly fascinating.
Not my fault.
Well, you didn't have to include it though, did you? You're making us all sound
like
a bunch of
local
yokels.
I did, because that's why he came to Pennsylvania. Sorry, mate.
You could have just said his good friend Benjamin Franklin invited him and he came. But anyway,
right,
Ralph, have you ever been to Pennsylvania, the great state of Pennsylvania?
I have. I've been to the Pittsburgh area, but not this area that Fiona was talking about. It looks just gorgeous.
Oh,
plenty of photos to be taken there.
For sure,
absolutely,
beautiful
absolutely.
Place.
Absolutely.
Do come to the Susquehanna Valley. I'd be happy to welcome you, and there are lots of photo opportunities and canoeing opportunities and stuff like that, and history opportunities.
Looked beautiful. That was really well done.
So Ralph, I'm guessing that most of your tours, if not all of your tours, are outside of the US.
Yeah, that's right. I actually did a couple. I mean, I started here, as I mentioned. I started my business in Southern California, where, you know, I must have had 20, 25 different tours from 2 to 2 hours to a long weekend. But I used to start bringing groups back to Chicago as a way to get a free trip back to my hometown when I was living in Southern California. And then, but then over time, and not too long, I started doing only international trips. And so right now, I over with COVID, I did have a trip to Milwaukee and to Chicago, which I've done 12 or 14 times. So it was very popular and people were asking me to bring it back, but I was never around to do it. So it was actually a good timing to do that.
And is there anywhere that's on your sort of dream list of where you'd like to go next?
You know, Colombia is a place that I'd really like to get to. I want to explore Japan more. I've only been to Tokyo for 4 or 5 days. Japan's really high on that list. I want to get back to Greece. I haven't been to Greece in a long, long time. And so really looking forward to doing that potentially this October.
Ralph, you don't go there at the moment, mate. Unless you've got a bucket of water with you, I'd stay well clear of Greece right now.
Why is that?
It's burning down.
It's on fire. And Turkey, to be fair.
Well, come on, guys. I can't imagine the whole country's burning down. But I would imagine that's more on the mainland, right? But I hadn't heard too much about that.
Yeah, it's a terrible situation.
Now, this is the part of the show, Ralph, where the good listeners or the good viewers on Zoom get to ask a question, which if you're listening to the podcast, and there's a couple of thousand of you do download it every month, this is the reason why you should sign up to our Facebook group, because then you get the links for how to get onto Zoom. So Sergio, who is our correspondent over there in South America, was going to ask you if you'd ever been to Colombia or if you wanted to go. And you actually said that you do want to go. But Sergio, why don't you big up Colombia and tell him where he should actually do a tour?
Well, there are a lot of places, but I'd recommend the department or state of Boyacá or the coffee states. Like, it's called the Eje Cafetero. They are like the best places in the country.
Right. Yeah, I've heard nothing but great things about Colombia, and so I've been talking to a couple of tour operators down there. So who knows, maybe in the next year or two, I will have a group down there.
So how big can your groups actually get? Do you have like an optimum size, or how does that work?
Yeah, I try to keep it to anywhere from 4 to 10 people. Some of my trips are priced so that I can make them go with just 4 people. Others need 6 and maybe up to 10, 11 at the most. So that allows us to get into, you know, use smaller vehicles, get into smaller restaurants, stay at more boutique type hotels, where oftentimes we're the only guests at the hotel, which I really like when, you know, we're in a 7 or 8 room hotel that we take over the whole thing. And so it just allows us to be more mobile and to get in and out of smaller places that are, to me, more local type places.
So tell us about that first trip, you know, when you were, you know, still getting your water wings, so to speak. What have you learned from that first, what not to do, when maybe you did in that first trip when you had your first paying customers?
Yeah, my first international trip was to the Central European Christmas markets. And that was really fun because I'd love to be in Europe in winter. And that trip, we were actually a part of a bigger group. It was a way for me to kind of test the waters for this idea. You know, they organized all the hotels and transportation and everything, and I just needed to get the people to come with. So it was a way to dip my toes into this whole idea of leading tours. And I did that one other time with them on a Danube River cruise. But then from then on, I learned very quickly that I wanted to be in control of everything. And by that, I mean, mostly the timing, you know, when you're with a group, you know, bigger group, you know, you don't have any talk to say about, you know, what time the bus leaves or you know, when people come back or what you're doing or anything. So you're just, you know, kind of follow along. And it was a really fun trip, but I realized very quickly that, you know, I wanted to determine when we were going to leave and, you know, get better light or beat crowds and, you know, meet certain types of people at certain times of day. So that was really important to me.
Gotcha. Now, what we should do, folks, is do our quiz, because I know that Ken McDonald, Nick Rowworth in particular, will be coming to blows if we don't do this in good time, because the pair of them are quite competitive about this. So,
and I just say that, as usual, the quiz is in honour of our guest, and if you've been watching Ralph's videos on YouTube, then your chances of doing well in the quiz will be increased. But I have tried to make it more of one that might have some general knowledge in and or educated guesses, because I get told off for making it too difficult. So I've done my best, and let's see how we go. And Ralph, I expect you to get like 9 out, I think it's 9 in this quiz, or 10.
Yeah, I'm hoping that I can get
9 out of 9. Well, 100% result from Ralph here.
Okay. I like to think, Ralph, that I'm a little bit of a generalist, and if I don't actually know, I can do educated guesses. I can honestly say, literally every question here, I was like, what? Who? What? Yeah. So, you know, but watch out for the people here who are on Zoom, because they're much smarter than me. Question number one, which of these tour locations has the largest population? Is it A, Tbilisi in Georgia, B, Dubrovnik, where I've been to, in Croatia, or C, Kars in Turkey? Which of these tour locations has the largest population? Is it A, Tbilisi, capital of Georgia, B, Dubrovnik, sat there on the Adriatic in Croatia, or Kars in Turkey? Question number two, which of these tour locations has the highest maximum elevation? Is it A, Chicago, B, Rio de Janeiro? Is it C, Gani in Armenia? So which of these tour locations has the highest maximum elevation? A, Chicago, B, Rio in Brazil, or C, Gani in Armenia? I think I know the answer to that as an educated guess. Question number three, which of these tour locations has the highest average summer temperature? A, Rio in Brazil, B, Battambang in Cambodia, or C, Chicago in the USA? Which of these tour locations has the highest average summer temperature? Is it Rio? Is it Battambang? Or is it Chicago in the US? Question number four, bread. What's special about lavish bread in Armenia? A, it's left to prove overnight. B, it's cooked against the inside walls of an oven. Or C, it's cooked under hot stones. So lavish bread is from Armenia. What is so special about it? Is it that it's left to prove overnight? B, it's cooked against the inside walls of an oven. Or C, it's cooked under hot stones. More about bread. What's special about, how am I pronouncing that?
I'm going to go tafarnout.
Is that
good? Sounds good. Yeah, tafarnout. Yeah.
Tafarnout bread from Morocco. Is it that it can contain saffron? B, it's cooked directly on burning logs. Or C, you need to pick stones out of it before eating. Wow. Right, what's so special about tafarnout bread from Morocco? It contains saffron. It's cooked directly on burning logs, or you need to pick stones out of it before eating. More bread questions.
I love a bread question.
What's special about the bread in the Viscri bakery in Romania? It's deliberately burnt. Each loaf is no bigger than a fist, or it's baked in an underground oven. What is special about the Viscri bakery in Romania? Is the bread deliberately burnt, each loaf is no bigger than a fist, or C, it's baked in an underground oven? We're moving away from bread now, folks, you'll be happy to know, right? What's the name of the special railway line that connects the countryside around Battambang, Cambodia? Is it the bamboo train, the French train, or the Nori train? What is the name of the special railway line that connects the countryside around Battambang in Cambodia? Is it the bamboo train? Is it the French train? Or is it the Nori train? Did I say line before? Anyway, whatevs. Question number 8. Which river forms part of the Sweden-Finland border in Lapland? Is it the Oulu? How am I pronouncing that?
Oulu?
That's what I would have thought. Oulu River. Is it the Torne River or is it the Kalajoki River? So is it the Oulu River that separates Finland and Sweden? Or is it the Torne River or is it the Kalajoki River? I have utterly no idea and I thought I knew geography. Last question. These have been fiendish this month. Costa Rica with 0.03% of the world's landmass is home to what proportion of all species? Is it A, 3%, B, 5%, or C, 7%? Costa Rica with 0.03% of the world's landmass is home to what proportion of the world's species? Is it 3%, 5%, or 7%?
In any case, it's punching above its weight in terms of, you know,
absolutely biodiversity. Yeah. Big up Costa Rica is all I can say. Those, Claire, are some pretty fiendish questions.
I have confidence in our Map Corner listeners.
Well, we all will be revealed at the end of the show. Now, Claire, do we have some other business we can be talking about right now?
Yeah, let's give you an update on some of the social media from this month. So on the Twitter, a couple of maps about the Mediterranean, which were shared, one by myself and one by Magic and Mungos. And the one I liked was the language zones of the Byzantine Empire, which really sort of showed the way that, you know, humanity congregated around the Mediterranean. And the one from Magic Among Us had sort of Gibraltar at the top. So it was a completely different way of looking at, you know, basically sort of laying it on its side, which was quite fun. But from Twitter, I really wanted to share this sort of good news story of sorts, I suppose, that we spotted and what was tagged with the Map Corner hashtag. So I saw a tweet from someone whose handle was at mattress tagging, whatever that means. She'd acquired a big batch of old pull-down maps from, like, classroom maps from the 1930s, and she'd been using them as roller blinds. Now, first of all, I'm so jealous. That sounds so cool. Anyone who's got old pull-down maps that I can repurpose as roller blinds, please make yourself known to me. But some of the maps, because of their date from the 1930s, some of the maps were kind of uncomfortable in terms of the content, especially a couple that were looking at the colonization of Africa. And she was looking for a kind of new home for these that would be appropriate. And she put it out on Twitter with some pictures of those maps. And actually, there were loads of offers. And it's gone to the Four Keeps Books reading room in Atlanta, Georgia, where they have a real focus on Black literature and history and a reading room where people can stop and look at these maps and put them in context. So I thought that was a really nice sort of good news out of bad news, if you like, story that we saw on Twitter this month. It's got the Map Corner hashtag. So do take a look at that one. Over on our Facebook group, our most commented map was one from Luke Baxter, which he posted a map that was, it was like a map of Europe with like a lot of the borders in the wrong place and the names were wrong. And like, and clearly there's nothing like a poorly labelled map to arouse the ire of the Map Corner listener, because everyone piled in with comments on that one. I think they all share a dislike of a poor quality map. And another interesting one was from Karen Cunningham, which looked at UK land use and, you know, how much space, well, what a lot of space we give over to beef and lamb production. That's the main thing I would take from that. And it helps have that perennial conversation. Do we have more land used as golf courses than we have for housing? It's one of my favourite themes, as you know, so I won't go into that. And of course, we've had quite the sporting month or so. So quite a number of sport-related things. The maps around the European Championships of the football and a couple of posts around the Olympics. one from Brett about the opening ceremony and all the flags, and one from Ken around the samurai characters that were made out of kind of flags and symbols from countries, which was just beautiful. I really urge people to take a look at that. It was fantastic. And also competitive, but not maybe sporting as such, was the video that Royfield posted around who had the biggest GDP for over about 120 years, showing the kind of rise and fall of economic might, which was, you know, with the music is particularly compelling. It makes it feel like some sort of, you know, action movie or something. So that was an interesting one. So yeah, all that to be found on our Facebook group, Map Corner. Find us and join the group on Facebook. And if you've got something interesting, post there or to hashtag Map Corner on Twitter.
I must admit that video that I posted, which I'd forgotten that I'd even posted it until you actually said, I watched that about 5 times. It's utterly compelling, right? Because it's fundamentally a race, isn't it? You know, and as you said, kind of certain countries kind of rise and fall, you know, and it's told over this 120 year period. The United States is always ahead, but who is second, third, fourth, fifth? That's up for argument and stuff. So in Britain rises and falls, and you get interesting countries like Argentina after the Second World War. Argentina becomes one of the biggest economies in the world and it falls away, and even India is there and then falls away.
And the German reunification as well. Yes. So that, like, you see this moment where, you know, you've got West Germany and you've got Germany and it all dashes up and down. So you see, you know, historical events in the context of this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems like Britain and France are always in some kind of death match. You know, it's like the French are never too far beyond. Then they go beat us. Anyway, lots of fun. And I cannot remember the name of that YouTube channel where that is. But if you go back onto the Facebook page and have a look, they've got so many of these things and they're utterly compelling. And you just get your popcorn, sit down and watch, you know, the rise and fall of nations told in graphic form. It's utterly compelling.
I kind of want a slow motion version, actually, coming through the sports theme, because it goes so quickly.
That's called real life, the slow motion version. Right, what should we do now, Claire? Because I'm more at a loss. I'm not looking at the script.
Well, I think it's time to do the quiz answers.
Right, smashing. All right, we'll do that then, shall we? So we will go to our guest of honour, who will, of course, know all of these answers. So, number one, sir, which of these tour locations has the largest population? Is it A, Tbilisi, B, Dubrovnik, C, Katyn, Turkey? I'm going to guess Tbilisi because it's a capital city. Educated guess. The answer is?
I would say Tbilisi too.
Yeah, you're right. It's Tbilisi. And by some margin, to be fair, it's not a big capital city. It's only got just over 1 million people, but it's very significant. It's more than twice the size of Dubrovnik, and Kaz is teeny tiny, less than 8,000.
I was going to say, I've been to Dubrovnik, and that's not a big place. Right, so I've got one question right. Great, well done me. Which of these tour locations has the highest maximum elevation? Now, educated guest time here, right? Chicago is right by a lake, right? Rio is right by the sea, but there are mountains circling Rio. Garni in Armenia, I do not know. My guess would be Rio. Ralph, the answer is?
I'm going back and forth between Rio and Garni, but perhaps Garni.
Oh, God, yes. Armenia is very mountainous.
Yeah.
That's where...
I don't know.
Arafat. Okay, so I'm going to go Armenia.
The answer is Garni in Armenia, but not by masses. So the highest point in Brazil, in Rio, is 1,020 metres and Garni is at 1,400. So, you know, it's higher, but you're right. Brazil, its lowest point is 0 metres from sea level, but its highest point is over 1,000 metres from sea level. So it does both in the space of a short time, but Garni is higher again.
Well,
I believe Chicago is 500 feet above sea level, believe it or not. Yeah.
182 meters, this is. So that's
okay.
Something like that. About that.
Okay.
Right. Question number three. Which of these tour locations has the highest average summer temperature? Rio, Battambang, or Chicago? This could be one of them trick ones because it gets blooming hot in the American Midwest. I'm going to go Cambodia, though, as a guess.
I would say Battambang.
Yeah,
you're right. But they all have average summer temperatures over 30 degrees, but Battambang tops out at 36.
Ooh, all right, I'm not doing too bad here for educated guesses.
You see, you complain, but you've got making your educated guesses.
No, Okay, all right. What's so special when it comes to cooking? I'm all at sea though. What's so special about lavish bread, which is from Armenia? I've utterly no idea. Ralph, the answer is?
It's cooked on against the inside walls of an oven called it's a tonir or a tona. Yeah, it's very similar to the tandoor that you see in India.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a really great, great bread. Lavash.
Thank you, sir. More bread because Claire likes to eat. But then again, you said you did too. You said you have three square meals a day, so you like your food too.
Right. Yeah, these are all from my videos about, I've done quite a few videos about bread specifically.
All right. So what is so special about tarafa not bread in Morocco? And the answer is, I've utterly no idea.
Want me to tell you?
Yeah, go on.
You need to pick stones out of it before eating. They actually take the raw dough and they put it on top of a bunch of small stones and pebbles and it cooks. And then when it's finished, they pull it out and you actually have to pick off all the little stones and everything. So you want to be real careful when you bite into it.
Have you been to Morocco, Claire?
Yeah, a few times, but mainly around Rabat because that's where my family or in-laws were based.
So have you eaten this bread?
I haven't, no, but I had mainly the main kind of regular Moroccan bread, which is kind of in a circle with kind of quarters. And we had that by the pile every day, fresh.
Yeah, I've been
this
Morocco.
Is a Berber specialty.
Well, because I've been to Marrakesh, which is kind of Berber country, and I did not come by this bread either. So next time I get to Marrakesh, I'm gonna go seek it out.
Do it.
I suppose that was one of those answers. It was so ridiculous. It had to have been that.
I don't think I could have made it up.
More bread. What is special about the bread in the Viscrai or Viscri, a bakery in Romania? Ralph, the answer is?
Let's see. Yes, it's deliberately burned. So they burn it to a crisp. It's a huge, I want to say 3 kilo piece of dough, and they burn the heck out of it. And then they actually beat it with a stick to get all the burnt crisp outer layer off of it. And then they grind off anything else that's left. And that's what they sell. It's really interesting.
So do we know why they did that? Because it feels like it just sort of wastes quite a lot of dough in burning this massive great crust and then sort of sanding it off.
I think it just adds a particular flavor to it. It's very unique. I've never seen anything like it. We came to call it bread beating because they literally take these like billy clubs and just beat the hell out of the loaves of bread until all the thick crust comes off of it.
I can't help but think the person who invented that just got it wrong and then styled it out in a very big way.
That's right. Yeah.
I think you're right there, Asprey. What is the name of the special railway line which connects the countryside around Battambang in Cambodia? And the answer is, it used to be a French colony, so I'm just going to go guessing for the French train. That's my guess.
Actually, it's the bamboo train. But the individual carts themselves are called noris, but it has just come to be called the bamboo train.
Nice. Well, number 8, which river forms part of the Sweden-Finland border in Lapland? And the answer, Mr. Ralph, is?
The Torne River, T-O-R-N-E.
It's not one of Europe's biggest rivers, is it?
No, it's fairly small actually, but I do a trip up to Finnish and Swedish Lapland, and so we definitely cross the river. It's funny because we might stay in Finland, but then we go to Sweden to do something and the time changes just right across the river.
Wow.
At least at certain times of year. I don't know if it changes throughout the year. But that was always interesting, trying to gather the troops and, say, well, we're going to meet at 8 o'clock and, people are an hour off.
And the last question. Costa Rica has 0.03% of the world's landmass, but is home to what proportion of all of its species?
Do you want to take a guess, Moorfield?
You're asking me to guess?
Yeah, take a guess.
All right. 3% sounds like, what's that? That's 100% on from landmass to, and there's a certain synchronicity there, right? So it's, I'm going to go, it's either 3 or 5%. My gut is telling me 3%. My head is saying 5%. I'm going to go 3%.
Ralph?
I believe it's 5, isn't it?
You're right, yeah.
God damn it.
So close.
Yeah, it's a pretty incredible statistic for sure.
Mm, absolutely.
Nat Geo calls it the most biologically intense place on Earth, at least the Osa Peninsula of Costa Rica, which is an even smaller percentage of the country itself.
Yeah. Now, good people, we need you to not hide your genius here. Who got all 9 of those questions right? And your name cannot be Ralph to answer this. Right? So if your name is not Ralph and you've got...
Although he's the most qualified to do us an audio postcard, to be honest. The man's going all over the place.
Very true. All right, who got 1 wrong? Unmute yourself. 2 wrong? This is how hard these were this week.
Well, I can't help but feel that you're doing this like the wrong way around, like by asking how many they got wrong. Like that's kind of focusing on the negative there.
Maybe they got them all right. Right?
You know, that is true.
You didn't even ask.
I didn't ask. Okay, let me start again. Who got all of the questions correct? No surprise. Okay, nobody got them all correct. All right. Who got, we've done to 6 correct. Let's be doing this positively. Wow.
Gosh, Joe, I thought me.
5 correct.
6. I had 6.
Whoa, hey, Sergio.
Nicely done.
Which ones did you get incorrect, Sergio?
The 4th, the 5th, and the 9th.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So you were stumped about the biodiversity of Costa Rica too.
You're in good company there, Matt, then Royfield.
Yes. Though, you know, should have gone with my head, not my gut. I'd have got it right. Well done, Sergio. But you did do an audio postcard last month, which is rather good. About Bogota.
Yeah.
So have the Bogota tourist board, have they been knocking on your door saying they need more work from you?
Well, I haven't checked.
Well, you know, I suppose, you know, a lot of these audio postcards end up being a homage to one specific page. So if you had Sarah Spilsby doing Smethwick, right, which... Sarah, I think you won't knock me when I say Smethwick isn't exactly known as a tourist destination or somewhere which is particularly beautiful on the eyes, is it?
It's not famed for it, no.
It's not famed for it. You did a blooming good job of selling it, you know, a bit
Thank
of Malcolm
you.
X.
Very much so.
You know, the political history. I'm guessing, Sergio, though, that Bogota gets a lot of tourists and stuff.
Yeah, especially in the downtown, the historic center. Mm-hmm. A lot of international tourists.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I don't know. Well, what we're going to have to do, Claire, I know I've been promising this for quite some time, is to put all the audio postcards actually up on YouTube. And, you know, they can be their own little channel there because there's a lot of great work there.
There's some gems.
Yeah. So I don't know what we're going to do. If Sergio, whether you want to pick up the mantle for next month and do another audio postcard, would you be up for that?
Sure. I'll think about another place here in Colombia.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Brilliant. We don't know very much about Colombia, so everything's new to me.
There you go. There you go, folks. I think it's only time for me to say, Claire, do we have a map fact of the month?
We do. And basically, it was just my ability to, it's just an opportunity for me to pay homage to the amazing bit of the Olympic opening ceremony where they had the revolving globe in the sky because, you know, I really enjoyed watching the opening ceremony. I got quite sort of, you know, choked up and teary at various points, you know, and the kind of messages around the unity of people around the world and the things that we've been through with the pandemic. It was all really, you know, quite powerful stuff. So it's not like the most exciting fact, but my fact is that there were 1,824 drones that it took to make the giant revolving globe. But really, it's just an opportunity to say, wasn't that amazing thing with the revolving globe with the drones? Wasn't it great? Wasn't it beautiful? So yeah, it's just an opportunity for me to be a bit fangirly about that, really. So yeah, I think there's a lot to love in the Olympics from a Map Corner perspective. I was particularly delighted to see a map right there in the opening ceremony.
I love it when you get passionate, Claire.
Oh, I loved it.
Makes me feel all peculiar when you get all passionate. Ralph, thank you for coming on to Map Corner. You've been a stellar guest. Where are you off to next?
Let's see. So I've got trips coming up to Spain, Italy, France, and Armenia, Georgia, all in a row, back to back to back, just coming up in September, October of, we're in 2021 right now. So.
Wow. Right. And Ralph, do you want to remind us where people can find your videos and your books about photography?
Sure. So I've got my YouTube channel is Continental Drifter. So if you search for Continental Drifter on YouTube, youtube.com/Continental Drifter is the URL. You can find my more photography type tours at photoenrichment.com. My more cultural tours are at alacampagna.com. Hopefully you'll be able to put some of those links in the show notes. And everyone can certainly look for me on all the social media outlets at Ralph Velasco and at Photo Enrichment, and I'd love to connect. Please join my mailing lists and you can get some free downloads. And I've got some new books on Amazon, my 52 categories of a shot list that I just came out with. I created an app called My Shot List for Travel. And I put it into a book. So people that don't have Apple devices, which it only works on Apple devices, can now buy the book.
Great.
Fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Well, there you go, folks. Another rip-roaring barnstorming episode of Map Corner with Mr. Ralph and with Claire getting herself all passionate and in a tizzy about the Olympics. And that's the reason why you need to be on Zoom, because you actually saw her get so passionate and in a tizzy. So thank you for joining us, Sarah, Sergio, Nick, Fiona, Jennifer, who's rather quiet, and Ken. I haven't had a peep out of you today, Ken, either. You have to unmute yourself there, Ken. You can't.
Ah, yes. Here I am peeping.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's good to see you, sir. Good to see you, sir. So there you go, folks. That's us. Claire, should we just fold up our maps?
Yeah, let me remind you first that we're recording on the 21st of August with historian Matt Douglas. And then we return to the first Saturday of the month on the 4th of September, when we're joined by Palid Bow, who is on a mission to visit every nation in the world. So, you know, tune in for those, join the Facebook group, leave us a nice review. And now it's time to fold up our maps.
Just before we go, aren't there going to be fisticuffs about this every nation on the globe thing?
Well, I think I'll let you warm yourself up for it, because we already had an argument about that at the very beginning of the podcast.
All right. Take care, folks. Tatty bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.